Does anybody remember their family home growing up, or a member of their family that you'd go and see, like your grandparents, and there would be some art on the wall and they would have some sayings? Did anyone have experiences like that? Sayings, like quotations, like desiderata used to be a big one, and so on. Well, my grandmother had a quote on her bedroom wall, one which I have never forgotten. It's an abbreviation of what you are seeing on your screen now. The one that my grandmother had said, "I shall pass this way but once. Any good, therefore, that I can do, let me do it now, for I may not pass this way again. Any good, therefore, that I may do, let me do it now, for I may not pass this way again." And as a preteen and early teenager, it's amazing how that message, when you see it every time you visit, how it gets into your body and your bones. I can even picture what it looked like. And I have never forgotten the message. I later found out that the original was written by a Quaker minister. His name was Stephen Grillet. And he wrote it likely about 200 years ago now, sometime between 1800 and the year of his death, 1855. And it has always reminded me of the parable of the Good Samaritan. This is a story that Jesus told, and it's found in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 10, beginning at the 25th verse. I'll read it to you, and then we'll talk about it. "Just then, a lawyer stood up to test Jesus. 'Teacher,' he said, 'what must I do to inherit eternal life?' And Jesus said to him, 'What is written in the law? What do you read there?' And the man answered, 'You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself.' And Jesus said to him, 'You've given the right answer. Do this and you will live.' But the man wanted to justify himself." That's the wording in the New Revised Standard Version. "And so he asked Jesus, 'And who is my neighbor?' And Jesus replied, 'A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell into the hands of robbers who stripped him, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. Now by chance, a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So likewise, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, while traveling, came near him. And when he saw him, he was moved with pity. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, having poured oil and wine on them. Then he put him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii, money, gave them to the innkeeper and said, 'Take care of him. And when I come back, I will repay you whatever more you spend.'" Jesus goes on to say, "Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers?" He said, "The one who showed him mercy." And Jesus said to him, "Go and do likewise." What we see in this story is a lawyer wanting to put Jesus to the test, asking him, how do you get eternal life? And Jesus responds with a question of his own. What does the law say? And the man responds with a part of the Shema, which is something which is said in Jewish households and in the Jewish faith tradition to this day, daily. It is found in Deuteronomy chapter 6, and it says, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. And then he adds another excerpt of the law, which is from the book of Leviticus, all in the Hebrew scriptures, which says, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus essentially says, right, do these things. Love God, love your neighbor, love yourself, and you will live. But the lawyer is not completely satisfied. He wants a little bit more clarification, maybe. And so he says, well, who's my neighbor? And Jesus tells this story. And at first glance, we see that the story, which has become known as the story of the Good Samaritan, appears to be a friendly reminder to be kind to strangers. At first glance, that's what we see. And absolutely, that is one of the messages here. And that is what reminds me of this message on my grandmother's wall. Whatever good I can do, let me do it now. And yet we can look at the story even more deeply. And we can see how, as in any metaphysical interpretation, any interpretation of a story, how we can be each of the characters. We can be, at times, the places that we see in these stories and the activities that we see in the stories. Well, let's take a look at some of the other meanings we can get from this story about the Good Samaritan. The first is that we hear that they are moving from between Jericho and Jerusalem. It says the traveler, the priest, and the Levite are going down from Jerusalem to Jericho. Well, physically, Jerusalem is about 2,500 feet above sea level, much higher elevation than Jericho, which rests at 825 feet below sea level in the Dead Sea Valley. Huge difference in elevation. So from the Mediterranean Sea, as you move eastward, first you see Jerusalem, and it catches the moisture and the sea breeze. And then there are mountains, valleys beyond Jerusalem, and that is where Jericho is. Jericho itself is thought to be the oldest continually inhabited city in the world. And it has an ancient natural spring which irrigates it and creates this oasis of sorts. And so Jericho was regarded as kind of like the party town. It would be like going to Whistler for the weekend, maybe. The place where people would go to get away from the city. The distance is 17 miles, and in those days, that path would have been rocky and barren, narrow in places. Well, Jerusalem represents centeredness, the place of higher consciousness, the place where we operate from an energy of wholeness, freshness. Jericho, on the other hand, represents material consciousness, a lower energy, a place where we allow forces such as fear and pleasure and convenience and inconvenience all to influence how we behave. It represents the fact that for as long as humans have been humans, we have longed for and sought out material pleasures. It's the oldest inhabited city. And the thing that we want to remember about this idea of Jericho and Jerusalem is that we are always on a journey between and choosing from, do we want to move up toward Jerusalem? Do we want to move down toward Jericho? We don't know which direction the Samaritan was traveling, but we are told that the victim in our story, the priest and the Levite, were all traveling down. I like to imagine that the Samaritan was traveling up in consciousness towards Jerusalem. The thing to remember with this idea is that we're always, always on a life journey. And sometimes it is rocky. With every action, with every thought, we can choose whether we're moving down towards Jericho or up toward Jerusalem. Do we want the distraction of Jericho or the freshness of Jerusalem? And what would that look like? If we choose the freshness of Jerusalem, the question we can ask ourselves when we're in the middle of this rocky road is simply this. What is the next most loving action I can take? What is the next most loving thought I can have? That step is a step towards Jerusalem. Next, let's look at the characters in the story. I mentioned that we play all of these characters at different times, and we see a priest, a Levite, and a Samaritan. This is an exceptionally unusual group of three people. The priests were spiritual leaders at the temple, and the Levites, people who were Levites, were their assistants. Think of someone who is a platform person or a lay reader or someone who is part of and works with the minister or the priest in those days. The natural triad would have not been a Samaritan. The natural third person would be a congregant, would be a fellow Jewish person. It would be maybe a member of the community. It would definitely not have been a Samaritan. Why? Because Samaritans and Jewish people hated each other. They had hated each other for hundreds of years. The Jewish people thought the people from Samaria, they thought of them as half-breeds. To the Jews, there was no such thing as a good Samaritan. That moniker, that label of the story came long after the time of Jesus. To the Samaritans, there was no such thing as a good Jew. If you think of the priest and the Levite as being sort of the in crowd, then the person from Samaria would have been an outcast. They were absolutely reviled. It would be the equivalent of a person of color and a group of racists. It would be the idea of a Democrat when we're talking about Republicans, or here, thank God, it's not quite so severe, but the idea of conservatives and liberals, or a person who is gay in a group of people who are anti-LGBTQ, a street person showing up and being counted as part of an exclusive country club, perhaps. I get the idea, like, that it's like one of these things is not like the other, extremely so. And yet Jesus decides to make the Samaritan the hero of the story. By inference, he makes the priest and the Levite the bad guys. And what he's really trying to say is that it doesn't matter about the rituals. It doesn't matter about the roles that we play. What matters is how we see each other, how we love each other, and what we do when we see people in pain. I also see it as a reminder to guard against those labels where we say all Samaritans are bad, all Jewish people are bad, all conservatives, Republicans, whatever names you want to put, to label individuals who belong to a group, to label each individual with the negative aspects of that group is not being fair. Because every group is made up of individuals, some of whom are nicer than others. Everywhere. So, this very unlikely trio become part of the question, become part of the story. And what do we see that the priest and the Levite do? They see a person in pain, they cross the road to avoid. They go out of their way to get out of the way. Now, it may be that there's a really solid reason. Maybe they were concerned that if they touched this person, that they would become unclean and then would have to ritually be cleansed because that was part of the custom of the day. Maybe they're in a hurry to get to their fun time in Jericho and they were meeting some friends and they were going to be late. Who knows what the reasons are? Maybe they're afraid that if they're stopped, they're going to get robbed too. Whatever their reason, they want to avoid the person in pain. And sometimes that's true for each one of us. People who are sick will tell you that sometimes their friends will cut off from them if they reveal that they have a serious or terminal diagnosis. It's as if their friends are too uncomfortable with the pain. They don't know what to do with it. And it's easier to turn away or ignore them, or find other things to make them busy. When people grieve, have you noticed how uncomfortable you might feel when they are crying? Our first reaction is to give them a Kleenex, which is a way of saying, please stop. We avoid pain. We may say that we want to help, but sometimes it gets too uncomfortable and we're not sure how to handle that discomfort. I'm reminded of a story that Mother Teresa told about Mother Teresa. She had come to the United States on a speaking tour And a person came up to her and was absolutely touched by the work that she did. And she went to Mother Teresa and she said, "How can I make a difference?" And what Mother Teresa said is, "Go outside and find someone who is hungry and feed them." We act as the priest and the Levite when we avoid the pain of others. We also act as the priest and Levite when we avoid our own pain. And oh my goodness, we are masters at this. There are parts of us that may be hurting, and rather than us allowing that pain to surface and to give it some space to express, our tendency, because it's so uncomfortable, is to repress it or depress it or suppress it, deny it. We may say, "Oh no, I'm completely spiritual and I know everything is great and everything's nothing to see over here, no pain here." That's not being kind to ourselves. It's not being honest. Yes, it's true that life goes on eternally and that we know that there is a plan and that everything will work out in the end. But that doesn't mean that right now this doesn't flippin' well hurt. And sometimes we cross the road to avoid ourselves. Pain is uncomfortable. It is messy. It is scary. We bypass and move away, just like the priest and the Levite do at times. In contrast, then, we see the Samaritan. The Samaritan who represents love. The Samaritan doesn't cross the road to avoid the person in pain. Instead, he actually goes to the person. He makes an effort to be where that person is. Love looks like meeting them where they are, meeting ourselves where we are. And that can take some courage. Unless you know from a deep conviction within you that we are connected and that what we do to others, we are also lifting up for ourselves. It means accepting those parts that make us uncomfortable. But rather than avoiding it, it's as if, just like the Samaritan did, we soothe the pain. Simply with our presence, we add soothing oil, cleansing water, surrounding the hurt with the cloak of our love. Whether it's from our own hurt or from the hurt of others, it is a human tendency to turn away from discomfort. We can be the presence of comfort when someone else is in the presence of pain, simply by crossing the road to connection. The author Samuel Johnson wrote, "The true measure of a man is how he treats someone who can do him absolutely no good." Notice the Samaritan didn't wait to see if this is somebody who was the right color, wearing the right clothing. He didn't, you know, like, what did this person do to deserve this? Maybe he didn't lock his stuff up and he was stupid to leave himself so vulnerable. There was none of that second guessing. It was going to a person because they were in pain And just two last little thoughts. One is, sometimes we are the robbers in the story. The robbers who jumped onto the traveler who was minding his own business on his way to Jericho. When we say demeaning and critical things, when we rob someone of their sense of self-worth, then we are causing harm that has the equivalent, can have the equivalent, of cutting a person to the quick, knocking them down on their feet, stopping their journey. Let us not be robbers. And let us not be robbers for ourselves. There are times when there is a part of us that's like, who do you think you are? Who do you think you're getting too big for your britches? Robbing us of the idea of there's a journey in place. So whether it's to other people or to ourselves, let us not rob ourselves of the joy of our journey. And finally, we can be the person who is in pain. We can be the person who is hurt in the story. It doesn't matter how good or bad that person is. Sometimes stuff happens. And our sense of self-worth is taken away from us. Just as the person was simply traveling on their life journey and ended up being hurt, so that can happen to each one of us. And it serves us no purpose to then to add insult to injury and then play the robber on ourselves by beating ourselves up for the decisions we've made. So there are our stories and our messages for this story. There's my robber picture. What direction are you traveling? What is the next most loving thought you can have? Choose the journey to Jerusalem, to freshness, to life at a higher elevation. Adjust your idea of who is your neighbor and allow it to include the most unlikely people, people that you wouldn't think of as your neighbor. Let us not be the thief who robs our sense of security for other people or for ourselves. Let us remember that sometimes we are the victim and that life happens. Let's not be too hard on ourselves. And finally, let us choose to act like the Samaritan. Rather than move away, can we find a way to move towards the woundedness of other people? To be with them in their pain. And to be with ourselves when we are the person who is hurting. I invite you to remember the words on my grandmother's wall. You shall pass this way but once. Any good, therefore, that you may do, do it now. For you may not pass this way again. Love yourself, love your neighbor. That is loving life. I bless you.